really time to start. It's 10:10. Let me remind you where we are. Good morning. Let me remind you where we are. Everything that's on the blackboard is stuff that we've already done. Okay? So we figured that the Jones polynomial satisfies the so-called Skein relation. So Q times J of an overcrossing minus Q inverse times J of an undercrossing is equal to some expression. And this more or less determines the Jones polynomial. To actually fix the Jones polynomial, you also have to state the value of the Jones polynomial on the unknown. Last time I said that you need to fix it on the K component, unlink. But in fact, here is a trick, just as an aside, it's really not important. It's enough to fix it on the unknot. Okay? Basically because if you look at this picture, okay, then both it's positive, sorry, then if you replace the overcrossing by an undercrossing, you get an equivalent knot. Okay, so the moral is that Q times the invariant of this plus or minus Q inverse times the invariant of the opposite thing, or maybe I messed up and maybe I messed up the signs. Let's see, this is a positive, right? So this, okay, so this is equal to Q to the 1/2 minus Q to the negative 1/2 times Q, times the invariant of what you get when you smooth this crossing. So therefore you can read the invariant of the two component unknot from the invariant of the one component unknot. And you can do it repeatedly, and it's enough to fix the invariant of a single unknot. Furthermore, if you multiply the invariant of a single unknot by 28, it just multiplies the whole theory by 28, because this is a linear relation. So therefore, you know, you have to write the initial condition just to fix the value of J, but it just doesn't matter what it is. Okay? So, because it's fixed up to a constant, up to multiplying by a constant. So the convention is that J of the unknot is 1. And it's a reasonable convention, you have to admit, but again, it's not important. Then I said there are two further invariants that can be defined in a similar manner. One is the Homfli polynomial, and the other is the Conway polynomial. The Homfli polynomial satisfies that exactly the same as the Jones, except you replace Q by Q to the N over 2, where capital N is some parameter. And in fact, when capital N is equal to 2, it reduces to Jones. Okay? And I didn't prove that it's an invariant. Okay? It's determined on all knots, and I just didn't prove that it's an invariant. Another thing that I introduced here is often people are lazy to draw the overcrossing, so they write L plus instead, especially when they have to typeset it in tech. Okay? Likewise, L minus, likewise, L0. Likewise, for the Conway polynomial, the Conway polynomial is extremely interesting. A different parameterization of it, so an exactly equivalent invariant, just parameterized differently, is the so-called Alexander polynomial, and the Alexander polynomial is absolutely interesting. There are zillions of different facts you can say about the Alexander polynomial, but I will not say any of them now. I will only tell you that here is one way of defining it. So Conway of over minus Conway of under is Z times Conway of smoothing. And also there needs to be an initial condition, and the initial condition in this case is that C of a K component unlink is delta of K and 1. So if K is equal to 1, it's 1, otherwise it's 0. Okay? So that's, in fact, more or less even the hour before. And now what we did last time, so we defined, first of all we said whenever we have an invariant value than an abelian group, we can extend it to knots with double points by declaring a double point to be an overcrossing minus an undercrossing. By the way, I'm not sure if I stated it quite clearly. This is not something that happens at the level of the projection. And you could think of it as happening at the level of a planar projection drawn in the plane. But it's equally well a three-dimensional construct. Okay, if a knot has a double point and it lives in R3, then the double point has two resolutions and they are distinguishable by a certain right-hand rule, which says that which one is the over and which one is the under. And you don't need a planar projection to state this story. Okay. So in fact, the same definition works in an arbitrary oriented three-dimensional manifold. Anyway, so you can extend your invariant to knots with double points, and it's kind of like a derivative, or like taking the derivative of the original invariant. And then V is of type N if it's like a polynomial of degree N, meaning if it vanishes, if all of its higher than N derivatives vanish. So if V evaluated on a knot with more than N double points is equal to zero. So far so good? Any questions? Any? Okay. Then we said, well, in that case, V evaluated on knots with precisely n double points is a constant. Well, it's the parallel in polynomial theory of a system of constants. And it's constant in the sense that it doesn't depend on the topology anymore. Because if you have an extra overcrossing somewhere, you can flip it to an undercrossing. You can let strands go through each other. And the payment would be V evaluated on a knot with more than n double points, which is zero. Okay? So it's constant. And that means that it defines a linear functional on basically it defines a function on the combinatorial space of all knots with n double points, when you ignore the topology. If you ignore the topology, the only thing that remains is the combinatorics of the parameter space. The parameter space is a circle, and its combinatorics is the statement that various pairs of points are identified in the image. And this we denote by a chord diagram with n chords. So this means a four singular knot, in which, in the image, this point is mapped to the same point as that, this point to the same point as that, and so on. Okay? So we get a functional on chord diagrams with values in the same abelian group we started with. Okay? And then I said theorem. Maybe I stated the theorem earlier, I don't remember. But theorem. If you take the Jones polynomial, evaluate it at e to the x, and in fact it really doesn't matter that it's e to the x, it's conventional to write e to the x, but equally well I could have put 1 plus x or sine of x. Essentially, any function whose constant, sorry, not sine of x, 1 plus sine of x. Any function whose constant term is 1 and whose linear term is x. Okay? Anyway, whenever you have such a function, stick to e to the x, you can expand the Jones as a power series, and then you get sum of jn of k times x to the n. Each jn is an invariant, and the claim is that it's a finite type invariant. And furthermore, we've determined its weight system. So we figured out what W of Jn is for each such n. And the result was, so you take every chord in your chord diagram, you replace it by either a bridge or negative 2 times a nothing, times just deleting this chord. When you're done with this, you get a certain doodle in the plane, which is made of several connected components, and if you have k cycles, you take 2 to the k minus 1. Okay? Now, I didn't do it last time, but let me do it again for the Homfli polynomial. Okay? So, for the Homfli polynomial, well, first of all, you have to replace j by h, and jn by hn. Okay? And then it's w of hn. And then let's do a little bit of thinking. The chord going to a bridge came from the term where you actually changed the skeleton. Okay? So it came from this term. In this term, you have exactly the same prefactor. So also, when you substitute q equal e to the x, you'll get the same term, which is proportional to x. So the factor here doesn't even change. Okay? Now, the second term, where you erase the chord, corresponds to, well, you see, when you take j of a double point, well, j of a double point is j of over minus j of under. This is, q is roughly 1. It's 1 plus terms. Okay? So the left-hand side here is again, is roughly j of over minus j of under. And the mistake is the linear term. So it's the, you know, when you expand e to the x, it's the term proportional to x. The mistake over here is what leads to this. But now you take the mistake and multiply it by n over 2. Because if you restrict your attention to the linear term, the only difference between q and q to the n over 2 is that you multiply the linear term by n over 2. Okay? So, you have to multiply this by n over 2. If you multiply 2 by n over 2, you get n. Okay? And finally, well, I didn't write the initial condition, but if you look at the initial, the constant term of the initial condition, this is what leads to the 2 to the k minus 1 here, and for Homfli, it will lead to the to n to the k minus 1. Finally, for Conway, it's even easier. For Conway, the second term drops out, and this term becomes delta of kn1, and I will not even write it. But in a minute, you'll see why I bothered to do it, because it will lead to a nice exercise. Okay? Okay. So let's see, where are we? So we already know, okay, we've defined finite type invariants. We know that there are finitely many finite type invariants for each type. So if you restrict your attention to invariants of type 28, there are finitely many, because there are finitely many chord diagrams with n chords. So the top derivative has only finitely many possibilities, and two invariants whose top derivative is the same differ by an invariant of lower type, and these are finite by induction. Are you with me? Is it okay, my use of induction? Okay, my abbreviated use of induction. Anyway, so we know that there are finitely many invariants of type 28. But it would be lovely to know how many. Or it would be lovely to know whether every W sub V comes from an invariant. Okay, sorry. Whether every W, or whether every functional on chord diagrams comes from an invariant. Okay? And the answer is no. And let's see what is correct. So claim, W, which is now just a short for W sub V, for a given invariant V, satisfies the following two relations. One, this is the so-called framing independence relation. Framing independence relation, or in short, FI. And in later today we will probably get rid of it, but for now, and then explain why is it called framing independence, but for now it's still here. So the relation says that if you have a chord diagram that contains an isolated chord, so you know it may contain many chords, but it also contains one special chord that is short, that is not intersected by any other chord, then W sub V will map it to zero. Okay? Or let me write it in a more concise notation. So the more concise notation will be, this is a piece of the skeleton, or you know what, let's do it this way. WV of, here is a piece of the skeleton, there is a chord on top of it. My convention is, if I draw the chord short, it means that nothing goes into it. There is no room for other stuff to go into it. On the other hand, I didn't write the complete skeleton, meaning there is still room for n minus one further chords, right? Because our functional is a functional on chord diagrams with n chords, so there better be n minus one further chords somewhere. Anyway, the claim is that this is equal to zero. Okay? You know, maybe sometimes when I want to emphasize that nothing can go into this area, no other chords end in this area, I'll put a no entry sign. Okay, so this is like the street sign for no entry. Nothing can enter here. Okay. Okay. And here is the second relation. The second relation is the so-called four-term relation. And it's called the four-term relation because it has four terms. And it says the following. So first of all, you draw four copies of the skeleton. In each of these, then you write minus, minus, and equal. Okay? And then you write, well, you put one chord which is the same in all four. Okay? So it's placed in exactly the same way in all four. Then you pick a point, it doesn't matter where. Okay? But the same in all four pictures. And then you add another chord that either ends right before this one, or right after this one, or right before the other end, or right after the other end. Okay? And again, the significance of this being a short distance is that there is a no entry sign here. So no other chords can end in any of these little intervals. But otherwise, there better be, I should have remembered that there is no colored chalk in this room. But anyway, otherwise there better be n minus 2, right? Each of these chord diagrams has two chords, so there better be n minus 2 further chords. So there are n minus 2 further chords in all of these diagrams, but they're precisely the same. So the convention is, as always, when something is not drawn, it's the same throughout an equation. Okay, so here are the n minus 2 further ones, and they're the same in all pictures. And then the statement is, oh, I wrote it without leaving space for WV. Okay, so WV of this is minus WV of that is equal to WV of that minus WV of that, or said differently, when you evaluate WV on all four things, you get inequality. You get zero. I guess zero is if you had put the, you get true. You get zero equals zero. Okay? No, not zero equals zero. You get something equals something. You get inequality. Ah, I should have just said WV of this, WV of that, WV of that, WV of that. Now it's a correct equality. Okay? So let's prove these two little assertions. So the first one is completely trivial. So basically, if you have an isolated chord, you can embed this knot. Right? How is WV defined? You look for any knot whose singularities, so any n singular knots whose singularities are as specified. If I want to create a knot with these singularities, I may as well take this piece and embed it this way. Okay? So this corresponds to a short chord. A little kink with a double point corresponds to a short chord. Okay? And then there may be, and not maybe, there must be n minus 2 further double points, which I'm not drawing. But anyway, V of this is equal to V of the positive resolution minus V of the negative resolution. But the two are the same by Rademeister 1. So this is equal to 0. Okay? Now this one is a bit more fun. So let me draw the topological picture that proves this one. So the picture is, you take a double point and you make a lasso that goes around it, just goes around it. You draw a lasso that goes around it. Okay? Then you subtract the same thing, but with the lasso going above rather than under. Okay? And then you compute V of this minus V of that. Okay? Oh, and I failed to say, this is a local picture. Nothing else from the rest of the picture comes in here. But in the rest of the picture, there are still n minus 2 extra double points. Okay, there are still n minus 2 further double points. And they're in the same arrangement here and here. Okay? Now, on one hand, this difference is equal to 0. Because, well, our invariant is still an invariant. So you can pull the lasso under, from, you know, underneath the picture, and then push it above. Okay? So this is just the same as that. So V of this minus V of that is equal to 0. On the other hand, I could go from this picture to this picture by another mean. Instead of what I did before, I could flip this crossing, and then flip this crossing, and then flip this crossing, and then flip this crossing. So it's a sum of four terms, the same four as over here. Okay? So maybe I'll write just the third one. Okay? So term number one I'm omitting, term number two I'm omitting, term number three I'm going to draw. What's term number three? Well, I have flipped the first crossing, I have flipped the second crossing, the third one is being flipped, and the fourth one I haven't flipped yet. What does it mean that it's being flipped? What I really mean is that I write it as, so I can write this difference as after flipping minus before flipping, plus after flipping minus before flipping, plus after flipping minus before flipping, and so on. Okay? So being flipped over here means that I take the difference of the values before flipping and after flipping, but this difference is exactly V evaluated on a knot with a further double point. Okay? And then I have likewise a fourth term. Okay? Now, and of course I still have the n minus 2 double points as before. Okay? But now let's look at this picture. This picture has three strands appearing in it, or three pieces of string appearing in it. Vertical, horizontal, and lasso. Okay? Vertical will be, horizontal, so let's call them horizontal, vertical, and lasso, just temporarily. Horizontal will be parameterized by a small neighborhood of this point. Vertical will be parameterized by a small neighborhood of this point, and the lasso will be parameterized by a small neighborhood of this point. Okay? And now let's see the singularity patterns that we see here. Horizontal meets vertical, so we must have a chord going from horizontal to vertical. And then there is also a double point between the lasso and the vertical. So this is the extra chord. Okay? And so this was this term. For the other terms, the double point between horizontal and vertical is always the same. So this chord is always the same. There is always a flip somewhere along the lasso. So there is always a chord starting from the lasso area. Okay? Here, 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 and here. And that chord which starts from the lasso area must end either on vertical before the double point or after the double point. Sorry, yeah. So before the meeting with horizontal or after. So before the meeting with horizontal or after. And likewise for vertical. And then there is the lovely, lovely thing of figuring out the signs. Okay? So you have to orient everything, and for each of the terms you have to see whether you flip from over to under or from under to over, because the double point is over minus under, so you know, you either add the double point or subtract the double point. You will forgive me, I'm sure. Anybody does not forgive me? Okay. And finally, it is clear that we could have arranged those n minus 2 double points to go any way we wish. Okay? So the 4T relation is not just a single relation, it's a huge family of relations which the pattern is always the same, but sort of there are different ways of completing it into a relation depending on how you add the n minus 2 extra chords, and you can do it in any way you wish. Are you with me? Okay. So theorem and you know for the size that I've allotted for this theorem on the blackboard it completely gives you a wrong impression of its significance. It's in some sense the most important theorem in this course, because what we will try to do later again and again is to, well, it's extremely important for knots, and we will always seek the same theorem, the analog of this theorem, for any other class of objects that we will study. Okay, but so this is by far the most central theorem of this class. Okay, so theorem, this is all. Okay, so in other words, any W satisfying these relations comes from a V. Okay, any W satisfying framing independence and 4T comes this way from a V. Okay, so if you wanted to enumerate weight systems, or if you wanted to enumerate finite type invariants, you only need to enumerate things satisfying this relation, these relations. Okay? So, I want to erase the blackboard, but before the previous blackboard, but before erasing the blackboard, I want to, you know, and say more about this stuff, but before that, let me use the formulas at the bottom of the blackboard just as a test how, well, basically a sanity check, okay? I claim that W sub V should satisfy these relations. So W sub HN should satisfy these relations. Let's see if it does. Okay? So, let's see if W HN satisfies the framing independence relation. Okay? As a star. So, I have to take a chord diagram that has an isolated chord in it, and see what W H sub N will do to it. Well, it does two things to it. First of all, one possibility is it replaces it by a bridge. So it looks like this, right? And the other possibility, multiplied by a factor of N, is it replaces it by a nothing. Okay? But this is just sort of a step in the algorithm for computing. The next step is to take the number of cycles here and the number of cycles here and take n to the k to this number minus 1. Okay? Now, this of course is not the whole picture. Right? There will be n minus 1 further chords in this picture, and therefore n minus 1 further pieces of mess, but in fact, because we replace every chord by a difference of two things, there will be 2 to the n minus 1, or you know, each such diagram really stands for 2 to the n minus 1 diagrams, each of which has some further piece of mess in it. But the mess will all, the 2 to the n minus 1 terms here are in a bijective correspondence with the 2 to the n minus 1 terms here. The messes are the same, and the difference is only that this diagram always has one cycle more than that diagram. Right? With the additional mess, this diagram might have 28 cycles. Okay? But then this one will have 29. Okay? So there will be one more factor of n coming from the cycles computation over here than over here. And so you will get n minus n, which is 0. Again, this is a schematic computation. I didn't do the... it's schematic, but I think it's clear. Is it? Okay. So this is why framing independence holds. Now let's check 4t. 4t is harder. So let's draw 4t first of all. Okay. Now, now let's apply the WHN algorithm. In the WHN algorithm, each such chord could be deleted. Let's start again. Each such chord is either deleted or bridged. So you get four terms for each of these diagrams. So I have to look at a total of 16 terms. This is too much for my IQ. So I will try to make it a little shorter. Okay? So those terms come in three different classes. So the first class will be two dropped. Okay, so you drop two chords. The second class will be one dropped, one bridged, and the third class will be two bridged. Okay? If both chords are dropped here, you get the same thing as if both chords are dropped here. So the equality that you get is 0 equals 0. So this cancels this and this cancels that. And you get 0 equals 0. So the equality is satisfied for z's. Okay? If one is dropped and one is bridged, then, well, you see, if one of these two chords is dropped, then there is no distinction between it ending to the left or to the right of the other chord. So again, you get 0 equals 0, and that's easy enough. Okay? And then the third possibility is the only interesting one. Okay? So for the interesting one, let's draw it this way. You know what? Let's make more room for it. So let's start by bridging the vertical chord. And in fact, the same thing should happen on the right-hand side. Maybe I should be more... Okay, and then the other chord could end here or here. Well, likewise here or here. Now, when you bridge this chord, it becomes, in fact, it doesn't matter. Well, okay, let's bridge it. You bridge it, it becomes this picture. But the only thing I care about now is the combinatorics of this picture. So I can slide this sort of opening of the bridge along this one until it's here. Okay? So topologically or combinatorially, this picture is equal to this picture. Okay? And likewise, here you can slide this bridge along the sidewalk of the vertical bridge until it's on the other side. Okay? So this picture is topologically the same as that picture. And therefore, this cancels this and this cancels this, so we get an equality. Are you with me? Okay. What did I want to do next? Okay. I guess I wanted to make another comment before doing a few computations. So I promised that the framing independence is not terribly important. So let me explain why. So definition. So definition, well, and yeah, okay, definition, a framed knot is, well, again, whenever it comes to topological definition, I don't want to make them precise. So a framed knot is a knot along with a choice of a framing. A choice of a framing is a choice of a normal vector at every point of the knot. So a normal to the arc at every point, such that the choice is continuous. And you regard it only modulo obvious deformations. So obvious modulo moving this point, moving modulo continuous deformations of the framing, in which this choice is always non-zero. Okay? That's one way of saying it. So, you know, if you want the formal language, it's something like is a knot or a smooth knot along with a non-zero or an up to homotopy, this means that you can deform a choice of a non-zero section of the normal bundle. Okay, so that's the formal language for what I said just now. Okay, alternatively, so you see, you can think of it as a knot with a parallel, so you just connect all the ends of the normals, and it makes a little parallel to the original knot. And alternatively, and this is unfortunately my usual trick, it's, well, a knot with a parallel is precisely a ribbon, right? So one of the sides of the ribbon will be the original knot and the other would be the parallel. So the end of the framing. And in fact, it doesn't matter which is which because there is a topological operation which replaces them. In other words, you can rotate all normals 180 degrees and that flips the framing and the original. Okay? Now, so this is the unframed unknot.
or the zero-framed unknot. Okay? But you could equally well have an unknot with a non-trivial framing. Here is an unknot with a non-trivial framing. Okay? So alternatively, this is the same as saying a knotted ribbon. Okay? Now, how much topology is there in framed knots? The answer is very, very little. Okay? So, first of all, very, very little beyond the topology of ordinary knots. So, obviously, there is a map from framed knots into knots. Okay? Obviously, this map is onto. Is everybody okay with notation for exact sequences? Okay, so obviously this map is onto. Every knot you can frame. Okay? But what's the kernel? So, in how many ways can you frame a given knot? Okay? And the answer is, there are Z ways to frame a given knot. Okay? So, in fact, this is how much frame knots are bigger than knots. It's an extension of knots by the integers. And the reason this is so is, suppose you have a framed trefoil. So let me twist it a bit and then trefoil it. Okay, and then close it. And now I want to compare it with the trefoil with some other framing, in some other framing. Okay, so I put the other trefoil with the right with the framing I want next to this one, and then I just sort of with my fingers basically push the twisting. Well, so you know, it's kind of maybe the trefoil is too hard as a thing to demonstrate this with. Okay, I guess what I want to say is if you have a framed piece of strand. Okay, and you want to compare it with an unframed piece of strand. Can you hold this? Okay, what you do is you hold your, or with a less framed or a differently framed piece of strand, you can just hold your fingers and move them according to the other framing. And what it does is it pushes the framing to a small interval. Okay, so any two framings of the trefoil could be brought to a position where they are the same except along a small interval. Along a small interval, their difference is just the number of times the difference between the numbers of times they twist around. Okay? Now, there is a semi-natural way of splitting this sequence. Okay, so in R3, there is a canonical splitting. Okay, but not in general three-manifold. So it's not something that's defined locally. It's a special property of R3. Okay, so in R3, there is always a splitting. You're given a framed knot, you can always say what is its framing. Or in other words, you can always choose a representative. Given a knot here, you can always choose a representative here which in some sense has zero framing. But this is not a general fact, so this is a fact to be avoided. Okay, it's a particular fact for R3. Why is it? Nevertheless, why is this fact true? So, first of all, I should say that there is a Rademeister theory for framed knots just as well. And the Rademeister theory is, should I say that? Okay, let's draw the knots as ribbons. So you take your chalk and hold it sideways when drawing the Rademeister moves. So this is equivalent to this. Well, I'll draw only one side of Rademeister 3, but you understand that it's equivalent to the other side. And the distinction is that this is not equivalent to that. Okay? And this is, again, something that you can verify with a piece of ribbon. So, well, I will not do it, but sort of if you pull this one, it comes to be this with a kink. Okay? And this is, in fact, the Rademeister theory for ribbon knots. You just draw them as thicker, or for frame knots, you just draw them as thicker lines, or alternatively, you draw them as standard lines, but remember that they're thick. Okay? And you mod out by Rademeister 2 and Rademeister 3. You do not mod out by Rademeister 1. There is a tiny lie here, but it's not really important. And the point is that, okay, but now we have an invariant of such things. And this is the Wright. We've already determined that the Wright is an invariant. And you can check that the Wright is the splitting, is a splitting of this sequence. Okay? And one last thing. So if we switch to talking about frame knots, and later we will see that it's always a good idea. So if we switch to talking about frame knots, then, well, since this relation came from Rademeister 1, it drops out. On the other hand, this relation stays the same. Because, well, if you look at this picture, we never used Rademeister 1. And finally, this theorem stays the same. So, any W satisfying 4T comes from an invariant V of framed knots. And I should have said that finite type can be defined for framed knots in exactly the same way. Okay? And, well, I guess that's it for today.
So is the Wright only definable in R3? Or
yes.
So what about the Kaufman bracket? Is it only definable in R3?
The Kaufman bracket... I don't want to say that it's only definable in R3 because it's a lie, but it's not defined in an arbitrary 3-manifold. It's defined, for example, it's defined for virtual knots, okay, which are knots on surfaces. Okay, but you must have some notion of projection. The Kaufman bracket comes from a projection to the plane. You cannot, it's not an R3 definition. Okay? So you must have a projection to the, you must be able to project to the plane or to some other surface. So it's not quite just R3, but it's not an arbitrary 3-manifold. Okay? Likewise, the Wright. The Wright came by counting crossings. So you had to project it to the plane to define the Wright. So it's not a 3-manifold. It doesn't make sense for arbitrary manifolds. Okay?